you, Bradfords. Thank you, Bradfords. That was really fun. I hate that part where they go, sing along, and I don't know any of the words. It's like, what do you do that? Good morning. I'm feeling frisky today. Happy to be here. And when we were praying before we come out, Reverend Clyde said something about, and there's something really important Reverend Karen has to say today. And I thought that's really funny because I actually wrote in the word urgency in the intro to the words that I want to share this morning. And I do always. I don't think I would come if it didn't feel somehow important to me to deliver some kind of a message, something useful that we can take home. And what I'm pretty sure is going to happen today is that some of you are going to welcome the homework I will be suggesting, and others of you will just laugh while you leave, being very content with your life the way it is. And either way you go on that is fine. There's nobody's going to get any more gift out of it than anybody else. The gift is that we are all here today sharing this experience. So the title of my message is The Soul That Stands Ajar. It comes from a gorgeous poem from Emily Dickinson. And the full line of that poem says, "The soul should always stand ajar, ready to welcome the ecstatic experience." I love that. I think that the reason I'm here, and after all these years of dedicating myself to my own spiritual growth, I'm not talking about ministry, I'm just saying that my love affair with this spiritual path has to do with statements like that, you know, we're born into these beautiful bodies and given this opportunity to have a wonderful, amazing experience of living along with everything else that comes with that package of life. But that there's always that yearning within that knows there's something more. And sometimes there are those of us who just value a little peek of it, a little taste of it. And so the urgency I'm feeling in speaking to you this morning about allowing our souls to remain ajar has to do with that theme of openness. I want to talk to you this morning about being open. Our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, who is one of the great many metaphysicians that brought this higher thinking into sort of form where we can come on a Sunday morning and have a chat together. Ernest Holmes used the expression to be open at the top. And I think that's very important. I think that almost every week you will hear me say some variation of having our minds and our hearts opened through this experience of gathering in spiritual community. And so that's the theme where I want to really put emphasis today. It's on how open are we, and what does it mean to be open at the top? In fact, what does it mean to be open to the ecstatic experience, to allow your soul to be ajar. Think of that, just slightly open. I love that statement because it doesn't mean I'm doing anything wrong. It gives me an invitation to just be sort of on the edge of my seat to have a holy encounter and to have that sort of idea of expectation around it. This is how Ernest Holmes spoke about what it means to be open at the top. He said, "When we remain open at the top, there is always a new influx of wisdom." Okay, now we're on to something. When we are open at the top, in other words, he's speaking of more than open-mindedness. Can we accept new ideas? Are we open to other people's ideas? And how do you deal with differences and change and all of those things that are a real part of life? But when we can find a way to remain open, which implies that the opposite of that is possible too, doesn't it? That sometimes we close ourselves off. When we can remain open, what we find is that there is always a new influx. Wow. Now, see, that just takes me in a whole other direction. Just be open to a new influx. You know, new, that whole word new implies to us that there is wisdom we have not yet encountered that is available to us. We don't have to understand it. We don't have to expect to know what it's going to look like. But we certainly can position ourselves to sort of have an open mind while we're listening to a conversation like this so that we can have that. Now, I want to be very specific here. He is not, when he says a new influx of wisdom, he is not talking about the necessity to take in any more information. We don't need a bunch more knowledge. It's not about book learning. This is not about intellectual wisdom, but he's talking about that wisdom that changes us from the inside out, because it's a wisdom that's already inside of us. Right? I mean, we are here as having this human experience, but that divinity is at the very core of our being, and it is the truth of who we are. So we teach practical skills for daily living here. We also teach that there's something else about keeping the soul ajar, and that is the way we have what I call that holy encounter, or a communion with the divine. And I would say probably every poet that ever put pen to paper or wrote in the sand felt something that they were trying to put into words that has to do with exactly that kind of communion. So here's a book I brought with me. I pulled it out of my library yesterday while I was busy writing the end of the talk. It's a book called Open at the Top, but it's a book about the life of Ernest Holmes. It's a wonderful read if you're interested in knowing more about people. It's written by Neil Vahle, V-A-H-L-E, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but he's written books about lots of other metaphysicians as well, in addition to Ernest Holmes. But I want to read to you something that I think is understated in our teaching, something that we don't talk enough about, and this is the part where I said some of you will take this home and look for an opportunity to practice it or have an experience of it, and some of you it may not interest, and it doesn't matter. What matters is that your minister is feeling an urgency in telling you about it. So in chapter 2, which Kathy, by the way, is titled, you'll get a kick out of this. Where's Kathy? Where did you go, Kathy? It's a title chapter entitled, As a Man Thinketh, in his heart so he is. And he is sharing a direct quotation from Ernest Holmes, but it was easier for me to read it from Neil in this book than to try and figure out where he found it and quote it from there. So here's what Holmes says. The structure of our whole philosophy. Now, he's speaking about religious science. He's speaking about this teaching, and as we refer to it as the science of mind. But I'm going to say that this is a universal truth for all of New Thought. And as a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say, I think that when I look at what's happening in progressive Christianity, they're becoming more like we already have been for more than 100 years. So they are looking for their way to be open at the top while they remain true to principle in the way that they interpret principle. And we don't have a judgment about that, right?
Right.
Right. Good answer. Thank you, Mark. So here's what Holmes says. The structure of our whole philosophy is based on two things. Out of the words of Ernest Holmes. The structure of this entire teaching is based on two things. Would you like to know what he lists those two things as? Good, because I'm going to read them anyhow. You know I am. The first thing it's based upon is the universe as law and order. The universe as law and order. And I would say that we do that well. If you don't get anything else out of hanging out or, around here, you will have a beginning of understanding, and I would even love it more if you had a deepening, an in-depth understanding of the way the spiritual law works. And I love that in this particular sentence, I don't remember reading it quite like this and where it impacts me in this way, but when he puts law and order together, that's speaking something we can understand. That's an intelligible way of understanding by law. We're talking about the universal order of life. And so if we look at the way the universe works and we understand the law and order of a working universe, we now can begin to understand, we can apply that same truth in that universal way into the way spirituality works. And so when we're talking about spiritual law, we are talking about an exact science and the way life gets to be the way it is and how that we can understand it and how we can come together in community or take a class in a sub-community, a smaller group, and learn how to apply this principle to my own life and to your own life. And I'm always working at applying it in my own life because I see the value in it. I see how my life has changed since I started applying the things that we teach. You don't live the same way. So the number one thing is the universe has law and order, but the second thing that he mentions is the divine presence. So we study and we understand the entire structure of what we believe is based on two things, that there is a universe of law and order, and the second thing is that there is a universe that is the divine presence. That's the part we don't talk about much. That, you know why? Because, like, how do you talk about that? You know, I mean, because now we're talking about oneness. Now we're talking about what it means to have a moment of communion with the divine. Now we are talking about what it means to, when the poet, who did not know Ernest Holmes, did not know Phineas Parkhurst Quimby, did not care about the classical philosophers, when a poet can say, we just leave our soul ajar. That there's something there. And so he goes on to say that one of these things is that, one of these things is we may use the law. We can use the law. That's what he means when he says there's a power greater than we are. It is a power for good, and we can use it. And that is the whole point of us, of the teaching. That is the entire point of the teaching. The second entire point, because you can't have one half without the other half, is that we can commune with it. That we can commune with it. So we use it, and we commune with it, and don't ever forget that there are both of those sides that represent the wholeness of this teaching. So here's what I know. It's not easy to stay open. It's like I just love practicing being open-minded and having my heart open. I love to be intentional in the way I want to practice compassion. And then something happens that's disappointing or difficult or really challenging. And the first thing that happens is that way that we're trying to keep this soul ajar, bam, it slams shut. And, you know, we understand that now. You can Google it when you go home or search it out. But, you know, we understand there's this whole spiritual realm of studying neuroscience now that explains to us why and how the brain works. And it's not a bad thing, and we don't need to correct it or change it. We just need to keep the door ajar so that we know it is possible to change it if we would like to have a different life. If we would like to have a different relationship with the experiences and the conditions of our living, including everything going on in the world, and your family, and in our own relationship to ourself and our purpose for being here. So it's difficult to stay open when things get in the way. Fear slams that door shut. Differences, for most of us, slams that door shut. Change, woo, baby. We don't even want the door ajar if it looks like there's a little change ahead. And yet we know that those are the realities of living our life. So we come together and we talk about these things, and we talk about the way when we slam the door shut, we are separating ourselves not only from this great potential, but and from each other, but between ourselves and this beautiful opportunity of practicing the presence and being aware of being in the presence of the divine. I mean, we can't even get to oneness if we don't begin to understand that there is no separateness. And so we practice finding ways to keep that door a little bit open. So when the door closes, whether we feel like we slammed the door or we think somebody else is leaving us out, when the door closes, sometimes it's dark. And sometimes in the dark, it gets kind of scary. So what I want to say is, as I peruse the book titles that are being published in terms of spirituality right now, there is a long list of authors, of people contributing valuable information about our well-being in relation to the spiritual path, in relation to our spirituality. And what I see a theme of, as because I read a lot of things, I like to read all kinds of things, what I see is there is a theme of vulnerability that we have been trying to hide, that the poets have been encouraging us to experience, and that the great metaphysicians wrote about and taught about. So you might say the mystic, not a psychic necessarily, but the mystic is the one who has opened his or herself to these experiences and knows that you really can't talk about them, right? Your experience will be much different than mine. And we all have them. Whether you're aware of having them or not, it doesn't matter. We all have moments where perhaps we're caught off guard and we run face to face right into the divine and have some sort of experience that alters our whole view of life. So we teach skills. We talk about being conscious, and we emphasize practice. Change your thinking, change your life in its most simple terms. But let me talk to you a minute about what happens when the door has been ajar and suddenly it's closed and you're stuck in the dark. Anybody just want to run right now before I turn all the lights out? Anybody scared? Woo! When I was very little, we must have had some routine. I don't really remember the routine. I remember the incident I'm about to tell you. It implies to me there was a routine of some sort. So apparently mother would tuck us into bed, kiss us goodnight, and we had a little routine. And she would always pull the bedroom door almost all the way closed, but leave it ajar just a little bit. And she left the hallway light on. I see some of you nodding. Some of you relate to that experience. So the hallway light, I'm pretty sure it was on all night, but I don't know for sure because I was a kid. I don't remember that. But the hallway light served like a night light. And that was a comfortable way of going to bed every night, knowing that you got that little light on. Well, one night, Grandma Skelly babysat. Grandma Skelly didn't babysit very much. Oh, it's a good thing Grandma Skelly didn't babysit much. She was scary. She was maybe 5 feet tall, very slight build, long dark hair that you never saw down. It was always wrapped in a bun at the back of her neck, and she wore glasses, and she was stern. She was always stern. It's where I get my Native American from, is all from my Grandma Skelly. But Grandma Skelly was scary. She was very stern, and I think she earned that. She had 9 kids. and 8 of them were boys. So probably all of that stuff that scared me was just because she'd raised a bunch of sons. Anyhow, Grandma Skelly's babysitting, and you get the picture. She wasn't the warm and comfortable grandma. And it's time for bed. And she takes us back to the bedroom, and she turns off the light, says goodnight, and pulls the door shut. Now, I don't know, but I know me, and I'm just guessing I probably argued with her a little bit. Like, oh, no, we keep the door open. And what I can remember is, perhaps I was just too scared of her to say anything, I don't know. But I remember being in the dark, terrified. I'm laying in bed, and I was really scared. And I do remember also that it took a long time to go to sleep. And I remember that that night, the wool blanket felt really scratchy and creepy, and, you know, that there was nothing fun about that night. So when we're little, when we're alone in the dark, and we're not used to being alone in the dark, we make stuff up. You hear a noise, and it sounds like it came out of your closet. We create an image in our mind of something, you know, a monstrosity of something that's hiding in that closet and waiting to get us. Right? Or worse yet, you know what I think is worse than in the closet is imagining there's something under the bed. There's something under the bed. And I don't know why we still pull the covers over our head to try and protect ourselves as if there's going to be any safety from that horror that we have created as an image in our own mind. But we're too little to understand that. We're too young to know it's just an image that we have imagined. It's just an idea in our mind. And so it's hard to go to sleep. And the thing is that I think even as adults, sometimes when we lack understanding, it's like being in the dark. It's like somebody's closed the door. Grandma's come to visit, and she's doing things her way. Right? And because it's a childhood memory, we sort of feel, we easily fall back into feeling sort of victimized. Well, what did I know? I was a kid, you know? I mean, because really, think about it. I could have waited a while, probably gone out and turned the, I'm surprised I didn't. Maybe I did, and I blocked that part out of my memory. But, you know, don't you just think it would be easier just to go turn the light on and then have a little battle, take her on, you know? I ain't afraid of you. I am you. You wait and see. So there's this whole idea that we develop skills as we grow up. We develop wisdom, but we also develop some fears that we kind of lock into place. You know, one time that happened, so I am never letting that happen again. And we have ways of protecting ourselves so that we will feel safer in the world. And yet the reality is that that doesn't bring us any closer to truth than anything else. So there's this invitation, somehow the poets understand it. Holmes spoke about it. Don't think he didn't. Holmes spoke about it. But there is a place of being receptive and vulnerable where you're not moving all the furniture around all the time to keep everything safe and pretty and just the way you want it. Because life is not predictable. Spiritual principle is predictable. And it will never let you down. But we need to be equipped. And so we train ourselves so that we know when we get triggered, there's some other opportunity for us to show up slightly differently than whatever's going on in the moment. So if we live with our soul ajar, then we're going to be open to this new influx of wisdom, and we're going to be more likely to have that opportunity to have that moment of communion with the divine, with life. I think that's why it happens so often when we're in nature or when we're enjoying the company of our pets. Because they're never mean like grandma. So I want to talk a minute about prayer and meditation. The primary two spiritual tools that we teach, there's a list of them, but the two that we talk about the most and that we teach with great consistency in the way that we offer classes here are prayer and meditation. You probably favor one more than the other. And most of you probably favor prayer because that's something you can do. Meditation is not something we do. We think of it as something to check off our chore list, but the act of meditating is to find yourself in a place of openness. It is a way we open that door. It is a way we keep it ajar. And so prayer is directive. Prayer is active. Meditation is when we receive. Prayer is when I talk to God. Meditation is when I listen. Do you create space to listen? Now, here's where a lot of people go away right away. When we start talking about meditation, we assume it means that there's some perfect position that if you can get your legs up under you, bent in just the right way, probably on the floor, and if you can learn some complicated breathing pattern, and if you can then, on top of all of that, completely empty your mind of all thoughts, you're meditating. And so, of course, we, majority of us walk around thinking we cannot meditate. Well, you know what I always say is, let me put it this way. The large majority of people I've had, let's just say in the classroom setting, that say to me, I can't meditate. I've tried, and I can't meditate. Those are almost always the people that would benefit the most from it. But we run from it. Right? We aren't dedicated at it. It's not fun like putting your demand on the word and seeing what shows up. You know, there's color and excitement in that. But being alone feels like grandma just shut the door. And there's a danger, except you're a grown-up, and the danger is that you're alone in the dark with yourself. So my ask, your homework today, is very specific, and I have never suggested anything quite like this before. What I want you to do sometime this afternoon or tomorrow is nothing. That's your homework. Your homework is to do nothing. You don't have to do much more than set an intention that you are going to sit still for a while. And so if meditation, the term doesn't work for you, what I'm going to tell you is you're probably already doing some form of it already because we require that. We require emptiness and stillness and quiet. If nothing else, just to process all the movement that's happening in the world. I was teaching yesterday in the morning. We were in like the last 20 minutes of the class, and there was an accident out in front of the church. It was like, that's very interesting. Life is never stagnant. Life is always active, and all kinds of people are bumping into each other, whether or not we're doing it in physical ways. It is part of the way we create monstrosity of ideas in our minds. So in meditation, if you notice, if you're trying to sit still and you notice some horrible thought just went through your mind, even if it's just like, doggone it, I gotta scrub the toilets later. Right? You said, sometimes I notice that when I try and meditate, the first thing I do is start outlining my to-do list. And you know, one of the ways I manage that is to keep a paper right next to me and just start listing my to-do stuff. Set that down. Now I'm going to meditate. If something else pops in my mind, I can write that down. But now I can sit quiet. It's not an accident that we're so familiar with those words. Be still and know. Be still and know. So, think of it as a way you're going to be quiet for a little while. You're going to sit in one place for a while. And you are going to open that door, keep your soul ajar, because you are anticipating an influx of wisdom, a new influx of wisdom. I have a beautiful quote I found from a Japanese Zen master. His name is Dogen. He says, meditation is not a way to enlightenment. It is not a method of achieving anything at all. It is a peace and a blessedness. It is the actualization of wisdom, and it is the truth of all oneness. Oh, those are gorgeous, gorgeous words. So find some time and a place to sit still, to find your own refuge from the world, your own sanctuary, because you have within you everything you need for that moment. It used to be that churches were that place of refuge. You know, hundreds of years ago, people would come to be sheltered and protected. They'd come inside the walls of the church for that protection and that shelter. That's not true anymore. The church, or a spiritual center, or a temple, or a place of worship, can be a place where you come and you feel sheltered from everything that's going on in your life because you set it all aside for a while with the intention that you're going to be inspired or uplifted or informed in some way while you're sitting here on a Sunday morning. But there's a bigger picture. It has always been true in New Thought that we're all about education. So people come to engage in conversation in the walls of our communities, our buildings, and the classes we teach, and the conversation circles we hold. People come for that exchange and that upliftment, but we come also for that information. And what happens is, and this is very important, this is a new idea I've been thinking about. Again, a place where I'm feeling some urgency, and it's not a ripe idea yet. It's like I'm still just kind of looking for the words to talk about it. But here's what I think. I think that as a spiritual community, we come together so that we can grow. There's no question in this teaching, that is very true. We are here as a community. The teaching itself is here as a community or a place in a larger community to help people find their way, but not to protect you. We are here not to eliminate the discomfort in your life, but to teach you you have choice. And that when we make different choices, we experience different results. So the only thing we need to be saved from is our own way that we shut the door and we leave ourselves alone in the dark. And I think that we do that sometimes. Please hear this carefully. We do that sometimes when we think we have it all figured out. See, there's always a new influx of wisdom. Yes, you are here to share your gifts. Yes, you are here to teach. But how do you teach if you don't keep learning? You're just going to be saying the same old stuff. And I mean, that's enough, but that is not anybody's purpose. It's not just to be here to teach. We are here first to be students of life, to find ways to move through our own experiences, to find ways to deal with the conditions in our life, but to also, you have this, to also deal with the conditions that are going on in the world right now. If we miss that, we have missed everything. So this church is not here to protect you or to keep you safe. This teaching was founded and has been preserved for all these years so that people can learn to use principle to move through our lives more comfortably, right? Not to comfort you, but so that you can learn how to be more comfortable. If grandma shuts the door, you have a way to comfort yourself because you are never in the dark. And so I want to make a point that seems very important to me again and again and again in my own studies, in my own work on leadership and what's happening as the world is changing and how leaders are going to have to keep changing as well. What I know is that in this teaching and in many other spiritual beliefs as well, we have an inward focus on spiritual principle. In other words, we are brazen enough to stand here and tell you, right now, within you, you have every tool you need. It is a matter of us practicing, of us studying how does that work in the world? How can that work in my life? How can I use this today, right now? How can I know this will still be here tomorrow when I forget about all of this? You have all that you need already. So in that way, we have an inward focus because we know we make a difference in the world if we do our own work. If we focus on improving our own life, if we have any inkling of a desire to be more loving or more compassionate, what a great gift to the world, especially right now, when it would be so easy to say, another shooting. Look at that hatred. I'm not going to do that. I will not stand or spend a moment of my life looking at somebody else's hatred. I will only look at my own response to that hatred. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. Hear me. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that I have this gorgeous gift. I have allowed my soul to stand ajar long enough to know the truth of this, and that is that there is a power in this universe that is good, it is greater than I am, that I can use it and that I can teach people how to use it. Amen. So it's not wrong when you feel vulnerable, when you hear on the news that yet again, this has happened again. It is not wrong for us to feel vulnerable. But what is so perfectly wonderful is that we have this glorious opportunity to rise and to know that there's a difference between vulnerability and being a victim. When we are vulnerable, we are compassionate. You know, think about that. That when you see or hear of something awful that happened in the world or in your family or in life in some way in your neighborhood, that sadness that you feel is your own pain because we are one. So we do feel each other's pain. So vulnerability is not something you need to fix or change. You know, we don't need to hide from the things that are going on in life. So I found a quote from one of my most favorite authors in religious science. You've heard me quote him before. I'm completely enamored with his book, The Beloved Community. It is a leadership book. Otherwise, I would probably be making everybody read it because I'm so uplifted by the book. But he's a minister in our movement. His name is Dr. Reverend Jim Lockard. And from his book, Beloved Community, he says this. We are not Centers for Spiritual Living and the larger entity New Thought. We are not a point of refuge from the world, but we are a point of entry into the world, spiritually grounded. Do you hear that? We don't come here to hide away from stuff that's going on out there. We are not a point of refuge from the world, but we are a point of entry into the world, spiritually grounded. What would happen if more and more and more people had a desire to face what's going on in the world from a spiritually grounded perspective? Okay. Yes, there is change. Yes, things are being reordered. Yes, we are seeing everywhere around us sort of what they're calling a whole system change. And we don't know what the new system will look like. We haven't figured out things like healthcare and immigration. We haven't figured any of that stuff out. But we will. As long as we can keep the soul ajar. See, what I know is that's none of my business because I know what my business is. I don't have to, like, take on all the ails of the world, except I do that in prayer. And then I pray every day, more than once a day, I pray for the highest and the best outcome for all. So I know I am guaranteed, because I know how the law works, I know that everyone has access to that same good that I am speaking of and that I am speaking from. And the last half of that quote, and this is how I will end the morning, Dr. Lockard says, safe space does not protect people from disturbance, but it gives them a protected space to be disturbed in. So don't feel like you have to put on your happy face to come to church. You know, I had a walk out the door like, oh, that didn't just happen, did it? This morning. You know, and I'm thinking like, now how do I do this when I'm feeling that? So I don't put on my happy face. I come and I get grounded. I stand in truth again. And when we are standing in that sacred space, it doesn't matter what else is going on. We could come up here and do this. Isn't that great? So don't feel like you need to. If you don't feel like being here because something's not right in your world, then you probably need to be here. You need to be here. Bring it. Bring it. We got people that will pray with you. I certainly will have something to say that if you get your fanny here when you thought you couldn't, I guarantee you, you will get a gift. Because it takes a lot of energy to get your fanny here when you don't want your fanny here, when you got other ideas. So we have this great teacher teaching. There was this great teacher once, too. He raised from the dead last weekend. I don't get to talk about him again for a few weeks. We have this fabulous teaching, and it's practical, and it's usable. And you know what I love about it is that it is holistic in its wisdom. It encompasses everything. It takes in everybody's thought. And it is extremely practical and effective, and it works all the time. Just keep your soul ajar a tiny bit. All right, let's take a moment to realize what's just happened. To see it with real eyes. To anchor ourselves in something we can take home this day. And so as the practitioners rise and the ministers and they circle the room, we begin to feel a shift in the energy here. Something wonderful is happening. It is the movement of the Holy Spirit surrounding us, above us, below us, behind us and ahead of us, God. This one universal truth today, we breathe in these ideas, for we have been touched by an influx of something brand new. I feel this newness within me. I recognize it as the love of God. It has been stirred. It has been rekindled. It has been mixed up with all the other activities of living and being and doing. And I simply know that as we take that gorgeous, holistic view, that there is a new way of understanding what it means to be perfect, whole, and complete. And so this very day, as we recognize that that which moves in this room is the same wisdom, it is the same healing agent that moves within our being. It is the intelligence in the cells of our body. It is that divine, perfect order that allows all things to fit together each thing perfectly with the next. I feel the love of God right here in this beloved community. And I know it is this invitation for us to wake up even more, for us to open our souls even more, for us to be willing to pray and to meditate, to sit still and to love one another. And it is in this place of the spiritual movement, the energetic aliveness of life, that all things are healed. And so I know wherever there has been any indication of less than perfect health, where there has been surgery or medical assistance to help repair our bodies, I know that even in the hands of the surgeon is that infinite wisdom, is that new influx of information and knowledge and deep, deep inner knowing that this glorious body we have been given knows how to heal itself. And so just in the way that we realign our physical self to truth and feel the vibrancy and the vitality of life moving through us, we realign our minds even now so that nothing is left out, that all of our good that stands before us can be recognized, can be claimed, and we open ourselves to receive that good even now. Yes, just be aware that the grace of God is streaming. It is flowing, this movement of the divine life activated by the words of this prayer. So that whatever it is in our own lives, in our own experiences, whatever it is that calls for healing, that healing light is brought forth. It is activated. There is a quickening. And we are restored to that posture of perfect holiness where we know all is well. And if perhaps there is someone in your life for whom you have concern, we simply know that right there also God is. No one and nothing against us, and no one left out. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit. How wonderful it is to know that every blade of grass, every star moving in the universe, the way that the earth is this beautiful blue pearl spinning through the universe, reminding us again, we are here now. Life is good. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. I release these words, and together we say, and so it is. Amen.